November 6th, starting at 6 p.m. after the KBOO Evening News here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Thanks for tuning in to our storytelling and radio theater hour of airspace. This month, we're going to play a mix of storytelling that is live and produced by Mo Baustern and Carolina Pfister. Mo Baustern is a Portland storytelling treasure. She's the editor since 1996 of the zine Extra Tough, a zine that chronicles the experiences and adventures of commercial fisherfolk in Alaska and beyond. Mo performs annually at the Astoria Fisher Poets Gathering, where this piece was recorded last January.
In that wee dark engine room, where the cold seeps through your soul, how we huddled round that wee pot stove that burns oily rags and coal. Do you guys know what that song's about? It's about sitting on an island in the southern seas, waiting for the whaling fleet to come back. It's about wintering over just north of the Antarctic seas. And those men would winter over together, and they would sit around that little stove. And that song, I learned it from a Gordon Bach record. Gordon's been here a couple of times. And I'm just going to keep talking about what Fisher Poets is about. And it's a little bit about coming together to huddle around our communities and our stories and each other and our culture. And it's that space between when I breathe in to sing or talk and you lean in to listen. And the Fisher Poets is the container that kind of holds that space for all of us, is what I think. And I also read this sentence. I was like, well, I have this sentence that I wrote last year when I got invited to be part of something called the First 100 Days, and about 20 of us wrote for the first 100 days of our current administration, starting from the inauguration, and we just wrote stuff down, and then this activist named Amy Harwood compiled selections of it into this book, which I have a copy of, and I'm writing. This is a little excerpt of that from February 21, day 33, 2017, when I was talking about anxiety that I was just having throughout the day, and I said, or is my anxiety connected to the event I'm hosting tomorrow night, where people will be reading prose and poetry on the theme of commercial fishing? Lest one dismiss the evening as some yo-ho-ho fest, let us remember that the Bering Sea ate a 90-foot Seattle-based crabber last weekend, disappearing the sound boat and all six of her experienced crew after only a blip from the EPIRB, the emergency positioning indicating radio beacon. We anticipate some heavy seas, let's say. I've been performing a bunch this month, and it's interesting to me how hungry audiences are for outrage from the stage, to hear people on the microphone take a stand. Even more interesting to me is how small of a stand is taken to great applause. It's definitely informed my intentions regarding my own event, or at least one I am co-hosting with Lara Messersmith-Glavin. I'd like to take a strong stand on the mic, and I expect to be speaking to the choir, although I don't know how everybody feels, but I do know that people here are of good manners and diplomats and good friends, and so I am not too worried. I know you would be disappointed in me if I did not speak up for my beliefs and for the basic civil rights all humans should enjoy. Fishing stories, thank you. Fishing stories are stories of immigration, of indigenous oppression, of indigenous wisdom, of horrific sexism, of wanton cruelty to creatures of earth, of balance and respect for all life. Our abortion stories, our life stories, our love stories, our hate stories, our death stories, our funny, sad, and stupid, are timeless stories of the human experience played out on the ancient backdrop of pulling sustenance from the bountiful sea. And yes, some of them rhyme. Yo fucking ho. Thank you. And the OPB guys, Aaron, it's Aaron and April, and Aaron called last night and talked to me, and of course he's wanted to know what it's like to be a woman on a fishing boat. Would you mind handing me that pile of paper that's on that plastic envelope? Thank you, Kevin. And this is funny because I just wrote this incredibly long essay called What It's Like. And it's too long to read all at once, so I'm reading it throughout the gathering. This is the beginning. As a girl in upstate New York, I ate fish sticks on Fridays during Lent. The picture on the yellow box featured a man in a sou'wester, possibly with a pipe clenched between his teeth. The black and white photos at various maritime museums I visited are all of men, strong jaws, short hair, in dark sweaters and trousers, leaning on company boats or gathered on piers mending nets. I crewed on commercial fishing boats out of Alaska starting when I was 18 years old. In 1986, my older sister Molly wanted to fish for black cod. She called me in to replace her on board the 58-foot limit Saner Sunrunner as a greenhorn cook on a salmon tender. You guys know what a salmon tender is? No? Okay. Salmon tender goes around to boats or set net sites and picks up fish, records the weights, sells groceries, gives you the weather, just basically is your link to town. So they have a contract with the processor, and they act as a buying power for the processor out on the grounds. They used to give you beer with every delivery in 1986. And I knew guys that used to make 6 fish deliveries as often as they could. If you know Anjali Grantham, those are her, the people who raised her. She turned out okay. We pulled anchor about 5 a.m. every day, a couple hours after the fishing boats traversed our circuit of the deep, beautiful fjords of Kodiak Island's west side, collecting fish from the set net operations. The set netters pitched their small catches into our brailing basket, gave us news of bears and other excitement that rippled through the bay, and then waved us on. The crews were often made up of families with children on the beach and teenagers in the skiffs. Maybe a quarter of them were women, red cheeks under kerchiefs, long hair pulled back, but otherwise clad exactly like the men in sweatshirts and rain gear. The set netters, when I turned 19 and no one on my boat remembered, the set netters gave me presents. One kind older woman welcomed us to shore for cake and gave me rhubarb from her garden, a treasured respite from canned food and tired groceries from town. It usually took most of the day to pick up from the small sites that ring Vicoda and Uganic Bays. We'd anchor up around 4 or 5 p.m. when the seine boats arrived for their turn, offloading salmon, getting their news and groceries, and Rainier, what we called vitamin R. The days are long in the north. We worked most days until midnight or 1 in the morning. We slept until 5 when the anchor chain rattled the bow, our hydraulic alarm clock, and did it all again. I received letters from college friends in Boston, Chicago, New York, and from family back home telling me of the jobs they worked for $5 an hour, teasing me for my outlandishly high wage of $100 a day. In July, I wrote them back saying that working 20 hours a day, I was making the same $5 per hour. But since I had nowhere to spend it, it just seemed like more. I was fascinated with the same boats we picked up, which had almost no women on them. What would it be like to be a woman on a fishing boat? Not a skiff, not a tender. I vowed to find out. I was once a guest on a local morning radio talk show, and the female host, after asking the other fisherman guests questions like how long he had been fishing and where, asked me, "What's it like to be a woman on a fishing boat?" I replied, "I imagine it's a lot like being a woman on the radio." There was an awkward pause. I had a smug moment, satisfied at having exposed the patriarchy positioned at the center of that question, then lacerating shame at having used another woman to make my point. The thing is, I just wanted to be a person. I grew up in the 70s to the Marlowe Thomas Free to Be You and Me soundtrack, whose lyrics told me I could be anything and do anything. I wore hand-me-down clothes that fit me mostly. Looking at old photos, I see today what might be called boys' clothes. Not a lot of pink, no glitter. T-shirts with numbers on them. Tough skins. When people ask me over and over, "What's it like to be a woman on a fishing boat?" I think, I just want to be a good deckhand. What does this question mean? I have thought about it a lot since becoming a performer who gets interviewed now and then. The interview often includes this question. It's confusing. What answer do people seek? What it's like to labor long hours, sleep in stinky forecastles, go without showers, be separated from loved ones and friendly faces? Why wouldn't the question just be, what's it like to be a deckhand? Why add the woman part? Is the question scientific? What it's like to deal with menstruation, PMS, pregnancy, or other biological experiences of uterus-having persons who may or may not be women? In a small space with no privacy beyond a sleeping bag? I can go into detail, but somehow I don't think the answer involves free bleeding or improvised menstrual situations if the boat unexpectedly doesn't get back to town for 8 weeks. I will tell you that I have composed many letters to the manufacturer of Mustang float suits about how they should add a zipper, because I have filled the hood more than once with pee. If you just turn it inside out and let the rain clean it. Clean. Is the question cultural? Are you asking me what it's like to have my pick of any man in any bar on any night? To never have to pay for a drink? To always expect sexual assault and think someone is a nice guy if it doesn't happen? To have the same sexual appetite as any other 23-year-old but be labeled a slut? Is the question political? About what it's like to be a member of an oppressed majority deeply behind the lines in male-dominated territory? If so, why not ask that question? Here I am, a female deckhand, now othered by the asking of this question. I'm trying to make a wage and be good at my job. It's harder for me to get my job, even when I have more experience. There are a number of reasons why there are fewer jobs open to me. Sometimes skippers are married to people who tell them they aren't allowed to hire women. Sometimes skippers don't want to deal with the dynamics of having a gender-mixed crew. And sometimes skippers go to Alaska or live in Alaska and hang out in all-male environments because they don't particularly like women. That's okay. I get pitched this question and I'm supposed to open up about the hardships of this job to satisfy a question I think is lazy journalism. Will anyone hire me later or even interview me later if I whine on the radio about how tough I have it? I'm supposed to answer a question as broad as my fishing life. On stage last summer, I mentioned how common it is for the non-fishing public to tell me how dangerous fishing is. 3 women, I said, are killed every day in the United States in domestic violence situations. With statistics like that affecting every single woman, a fishing boat might be a safe place. After mentioning this, a man in the crowd began screaming at me, and screamed at me for 5 minutes. I was nowhere near a fishing boat. What's it like being a woman in America? What's it like being a woman on the planet? Thanks.
That was Mo Bowstern, recorded in January 2018 at the annual Fisher Poets Gathering in Astoria, Oregon. And this is The Vaselines with High Tide, Low Tide. Carolina Pfister produces a podcast called I See You about an immigrant on a gentrifying block and the lovely mess of community making. This first chapter of I See You starts out in a rapidly changing inner city of Portland as neighbors find common ground and ask who we can be together. We'll now hear chapter one.
Chapter 1. Psychic Home.
Although I did want to leave the struggling economy and daily violence of my country, I'm the type of immigrant who got a scholarship, which is different than paying for graduate school abroad, which is different than overstaying a tourist visa, which is, of course, all so different than crossing the border fleeing poverty and a violence greater than any I've known. I'm a Brazilian immigrant in Portland, Oregon, in what's called the whitest city in the U.S. Oregon had laws to prevent black people from settling in the state, and these laws have been linked to a smaller black population. My family barely squeaked into a rapidly gentrifying inner city by buying a house from a flipper who had done some pretty cheap updates. We knocked down two walls, put down wooden floors, planted a garden, and made home in a diverse and lovely block of the King neighborhood. This area of the city had been primarily African American, in that way that most black neighborhoods happen in the U.S., through planned segregation that kept black families in inner cities as white families fled to the suburbs. Portland itself sits on traditional lands of indigenous people who were forcibly removed and now make up the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde. A Cherokee farmer who had moved to Oregon once told me, "We're all settlers in someone else's land."
This is the music of how my native tongue would shape English. This is how I feel like I sound in my head at times. If I had an accent, you would know I'm not from here. Since I learned English as a kid, this accent does not belong to me.
You have an advantage that you don't have an accent. When you have an accent, people know you're not from here. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, I can't turn it off. I guess you can pass better than I can.
It took me a long time to identify as an immigrant because I wasn't aware I had in fact immigrated. Truth is, I live in between worlds, and by now I suspect it's a permanent home. Not my current physical home, but the psychic home I built as a westernized teenager in Brazil, who as a young punk secretly loved Brazilian music and culture. I checked in with my old friend Cris, a Brazilian immigrant as well, to see what her thoughts would be.
I'm Cris Siqueira. I'm a filmmaker and historian. Been living in Milwaukee since I was 30 years old. The way that I'm perceived in America is completely different from the way I'm perceived in Brazil. And I feel like I'm two different people. I'm much more comfortable in my Brazilian skin than I am in my American skin.
In an essay called In the Closet of the Soul, Alice Walker says she believes that to attempt to function as only one when you're really two or three leads to psychic illness.
Então a gente se fala depois.
Falou, lindinho. Beijão pra você.
Beijo, fofa. Tchau, tchau.
So many of us carry around conflicting identities, a feeling much like moving into a gentrifying neighborhood, navigating the original stories of the place, adding new ones, and as gentrification escalates, feeling alienated but being home.
You know, since the gentrification, I don't know. It's a lot nicer around here. You know, just more opportunities to try more things. There's a lot more businesses around that are really good, you know, that I would have never, you know, come into contact with, you know. But it is very crowded. And it just seems like there would be a limit to how many people you want in your city. And it seems like they don't care. Just there's building and building, and people are coming and coming, and I don't know where it ends. And it's really overwhelming to me. People everywhere, dogs everywhere, Subarus everywhere, Priuses everywhere. I don't know. And they just seem to be a different breed of people, you know. I think in like 15 years, I might not even leave my house, you know, because I won't understand how this world works, you know.
That's Bobby. He lives next door. His backyard oversees ours. We did plant bamboo for more privacy, but that's gonna take years. Bobby chats pretty much every time he sees us outside, although he's nice enough to pretend he doesn't see me if I'm practicing cupwit in the backyard. or gardening in a swimsuit. And then there's Bob, who lives across the street. He's retired and likes to have people drop by his house to chat.
There's a little place down the street here on 7th and Knott, a little coffee place. Everybody's lined up on one wall. They all have their computers in front of them. And honest to God, it was quiet as a graveyard, and they looked like a, what do you call it, gravestones. It's really what it looked like. And that's what's changed. That's been some of the culture shock for me.
This is the 32nd home I've lived in. Having moved so much, I've not had opportunity for the kind of community that's connected to place and built over time. Convinced I could fast track it for once, I picked up my microphone and spent the year mostly interviewing my neighbors, reflecting on how we settle, the larger forces at play, how we fit in, how we make community or not.
Oh, come on!
We need load 4 in the back of the truck over there. Load the back of the truck. Come and join us. We got some chairs and some water and some sticks.
So it's going to be audio?
Yeah, it's just audio. Kind of like the...
I'm not sure about that.
You're not sure about that?
Yeah.
Have you ever listened to an audiobook?
Yeah, I literally have like... I'd say about 20 on my iPad. Yeah, so basically it's someone reading a story and then it's recorded on a electronic device that can be, so it can be replayed.
Oh, it's like a story, just a story someone's telling.
Yeah, you take the audio and then you take a scene.
Is that your megaphone?
It's a microphone.
What does that mean?
Microphone?
Why are you doing that? Why did you get it?
I'm recording sound.
Oh.
So then I like you to give me some time.
Can you even hear us?
Well, I can hear you with my ears, but this thing is recording you guys. On our little Northeast Portland block, there are 12 children, 2 affordable rentals, 4 black-owned homes, 4 white-owned homes, and 2 half-white, one with a first-generation Vietnamese mama married to a white man, and the other with me, a first-generation Brazilian mama married to a white man. Of the 3 Black Lives Matter signs, none are in black homes.
Yeah, I can make us some sweaters. I can make us also moody sweaters.
Light waves. In the sun, listening.
Young proposes that the many contains the unity of the one without losing the possibilities of the many.
Secrets of the moon.
My name is Carolina, but Carolina works, and this is I See You.
Produced, edited, and mixed by my mother, Carolyn.
Edited.
Special thanks to our Northeast Portland block with their patience with my mother's microphone.
This project got off the ground with the Regional Arts and Culture Council grant and Caldera's 2018 Artist Residency. Thank you. Obrigada to Cris Siqueira and to Joana Secato. Thank you to Jesse Stevens for voiceover and interview post-production, as well as mastering. Music from Wonderswan, Italics, and Gunther, used with permission from Oligopolis Records in Portland, Oregon. Set Me Free by Lowleaf and Totality by Iman Omari were used with permission from Fresh Selects of Portland, Oregon. I shaped my story with your music. My gratitude to each of you. This series is for our children. I suspect at some point you'll deal with your own multiplicity and sense of belonging, so I leave you some clues for your journey. And thank you, wherever you are, for listening. It is my hope that you feel seen. Ciao!
That was Move by the Brazilian band CSS. And now here's chapter 2 of ICU, produced by Carolina Pfister.
This is Carolina, but Carolina works. And this is ICU, stories of an immigrant making home on a gentrifying block of Portland, Oregon.
Chapter 2. My year of noise.
The sound of crows is Portland to me. And the train horns throughout the night. Bobby's animated dinner parties next door. The redhead twins behind our house who were often fighting. Our millennial neighbors' parties. Or the guy who would sing in the middle of the night. And then go quiet again. My first urban love was São Paulo, Brazil. São Paulo is a monster of a noisy city. Portland pales in that sense. I love the sound of cities, but as a parent, my right to a good night's sleep is a measure of the quality of my life. I don't know that good sleep is a right, but it would make sense to legislate around that. I feel like I've inherited from my mother this notion of a social contract that exists when you choose to care. Brazil at times can be an extreme example of not caring, with its unregulated environment where so much gets done haphazardly and the notion of the common good isn't really on the table. The World Health Organization points out that even severe annoyance with noise is considered an adverse effect on health, and that it leads to negative moods and emotions, stress-related symptoms like fatigue and, of course, more stress.
The name, you understand, is Fred Washington. Big money. Alias, you understand, Double Mac. Alias, you understand, Sweet Train. Comedian by trade, you understand, hustler by heart.
Fred is a large man who wears oversized t-shirts and a hose on his head. Soon after we moved to his block, I left the house with my kids in the bike trailer. Fred had his car in the middle of the street, which he often did. He shouted at me to go the other way. I told him not to be rude and maneuvered my bike around him. Later that day, I told him I didn't appreciate how he had talked to me and his swearing in front of the kids. I told him we needed to figure out how to be good neighbors. He apologized and said he had been stressed earlier. But then, a few weeks later, Fred had friends over and they were hanging on his porch, blasting really loud music at midnight. I walked over with my confrontation-averse husband trailing behind me. I told Fred my children were trying to sleep and that there was a newborn across the street. He grunted. They turned the music down. Fred was pretty short with me after that, and now I wanted to interview him. He eventually agrees, but doesn't give me a specific time. So when I finally see him washing his car, I take a deep breath and just walk out with the microphone.
Hey, Fred.
Hey, I don't have time for today, babe. Real busy all week.
That's all right.
Yeah. My voice goes up a little. It sounds like I'm nervous.
What you want to know, buddy?
Yeah, I've just been...
I didn't ask other white people.
Huh?
I didn't ask other white people.
I have. I've sat down with everybody from Barbara to Jackie.
Well, as I told you, it's no rush. I just want to make sure that we find the time before summer's over.
Yeah. Once summer's over, so.
I keep trying to nail a specific time, which is how I do things, but it doesn't mean it's how other people do things. My failure to flow is at the heart of what I resist.
So what do you want me to do? Do you want me to come and ask you at some point?
That's my microphone.
Holy shit, what are you talking about?
I
I am a humble artist, my friend. That's it.
Yeah. can you get a hookup with the Irish? Give me some cocaine.
I'm not Irish. Artist.
You said Irish.
Artist.
Oh, artist.
Yeah.
I thought you said Irish.
No, I'm from Brazil. I'm not even from.
I'm trying to get a connection.
No, I'm from Brazil. Not Irish.
Yeah, I was trying to get a hookup.
I'm from South America.
No.
I hear myself needing so much to make the point that I'm not from here. I wish I could explain to Fred that U.S. white isn't me. But then again, I have the privilege of a lighter-skinned Latin American, and I definitely can't claim the U.S. brown narrative as my own, so I'm neither here nor there.
What do you want to know?
Yeah, I have a little list of questions that I've been asking everyone, and it's...
Like what?
Well, mostly about their experience in the neighborhood, and you're the one that has been here the longest, so your insight is the most interesting.
That is true.
Don't worry, Fred.
Take care of it, man. I'll be right now.
Do you pay with you?
I don't have no money right now.
It's been 2 years, brother.
It could be 3 months.
Well, so here's the thing, Fred. Yeah. I grew up in Brazil.
Yeah.
My experience in the U.S. since I've been here has only been in gentrifying neighborhoods. And I decided to investigate that, just to understand where I fit in and...
Fit in where you can get in. I get in anywhere I go. Shit, I don't have nothing but the mouth. I'm a true believer in, if you respect me, you're gonna give respect. But if you don't, then you got a problem. Because I ain't got no problem with telling you about yourself. You know.
You fit in where you can get in, but with heart. You get in where you can get in, pero perder la ternura jamás. This made me think of yet another Alice Walker quote. She once said she felt doomed to the kind of insanity that the pampered oppressed always feel, and for which there seems to be no remedy except enlightenment regarding their plight, followed by active exercise of the insights of their awareness. So, what I was hoping we can do is, I'll bring you a beer, we sit on your porch, and I ask you questions for...
How many questions? I ain't gonna talk to you.
You know, five.
That one. You can get the beer right now.
No, you have time right now?
Pick the thing up.
Okay, please. I like please.
Well, I don't really say please too much, so you're lucky.
Well, I like please. I'm teaching my kids.
What?
I'm teaching my kids to say please.
Damn kid, right?
Probably.
They need to learn some gangsterism. Need me to teach them.
That was culturally insightful of Fred, that I am most likely the type of mother driving my kids to be nice, to be conscientious. As a Brazilian mama, it can get worse, though. Like, don't jump on couches, take off your shoes, wash your hands, put on your coat, eat fresh food. Here's a recording I made without intending to. Our twins were six.
If you want peace, you can't take over the video game.
Yeah, it's real fun. It makes tantrums.
And that's not peace or harmony. None of them.
Can I speak now?
Yeah, peace means that you can't take away things.
Yeah.
And harmony means the same. Then you have to leave it flat.
Okay, I'm going to try again. We sat down as a family just to make sure.
You're saying the same thing again.
You never let me finish, so I'm going to try again.
Okay? Fine then.
We sat down as a family just to look at what the expectations are for our days to go by nicely.
And well, then it isn't fair if we get our screen time taken away. You guys should get your screen
all
time.
Of
let
away.
Me talk! Mama, you know, people can't do it. People, sometimes just stop stuff, Mama.
All right.
But Mama,
all
we
right.
tried it, and that's why it's
remember
not fair.
Remember this next time you get to that point. Say, okay, come up with a strategy. Take a walk outside. We wouldn't mind.
We were trying. I offered an extra video game day in exchange for letting me use this recording. They both have a point here. How is peace and harmony to be achieved? Where do we meet each other?
What's are happening? You seriously recording all of this?
Talking is tiring. It's circular. Having the privilege of choice and reflection, I feel it's my responsibility to examine my assumptions, my decisions and way of life, and to let my children witness how I grapple with learning how to be in this world. That is all just to say that to reflect, negotiate, and choose compassion can feel like a lot of work.
I mean, I got a lot of white people like when I first met your ass. I don't like you. I don't like you. I didn't damn about you. Yeah, I know you was getting on my nerves. Kept running your mouth. I said, mess with my nephew about the music in his car. You know, talking about the babies were sleeping there. You know what I mean? When we was going to have our 4th of July blow up and everything.
Yeah.
But you see how it mellowed on out.
You did.
So, you know what I mean? So, you know, you just, you know, to each his own, you understand? You got to get the feel of people, get to know them and everything like that. Then you can't judge the book by its cover, you understand? You got to try to read a little bit of it and see what it's like in a few of the paragraphs. Read it a little bit to get to see what's actually in there, the context, contents, or whatever I'm gonna call it, you know.
I went looking for other local perspectives, so I sat down with Alan Silver, the president of our neighborhood association.
I think the question might be, are the values you're bringing to this interaction with your neighbor about noisiness or livability or respect, are the values you're bringing the same ones that he's going to bring? You know, he or anybody else might say that kind of noise and that kind of disturbance is okay for children to experience, flat out. You know, that it's not negotiable for him, that children don't need to be coddled that way or whatever. You know, like, and I'm just guessing, but, you know, if he, let's say that he grew up in an environment that was really noisy, you know, and he may well believe that it's not something that other people should take offense to. It's something that they should be acclimated to, perhaps. That's just a guess about what his experience might be.
Our mother taught us from the beginning to respect one another. So this was something that we always talked about.
I called my brother to make sure my family theory wasn't a fabrication.
I'm Richard. I'm a journalist.
We say Richard in Brazil.
Brazil is so corrupted in so many ways that it seems that the law doesn't apply to anybody, that I had an expectation when I moved to the U.S. that things could be different. Like in my apartment, you find a rent contract and it states that you can make loud noises after 10 p.m. and still people do it. It seems like they're not acknowledging that they don't live alone in this world, or at least in my apartment building.
I see what you're saying. There's the nuances and potential cultural differences, but there actually are written rules, there's spoken rules, and those are clear.
If I respected, why shouldn't you? And I think you should respect, because otherwise, if everybody does what they want, it's just going to explode.
What about in Brazil when you drove after drinking?
Looking back, I know now that that wasn't responsible, that wasn't right. It's a growth process also. You need to evolve after all.
UNESCO's homepage says that lasting peace rests on these complex and fragile daily practices in local settings. From these ephemeral encounters that we maintain out of the conviction that they lead to sustainable conditions for living together in dignity.
What kind of beer do you like?
Only 840.
Well, can I bring you something I like?
I don't drink white people beer.
You don't know that I'm white. I don't like that.
I will say what I'm saying. What is this?
When we finally agree on a day, Fred asks me for a pack of Newports and a fifth of Black Velvet. I say yes, because even though I'm drawn to people's stories, I don't like the feeling of just taking. So in this way, we're exchanging something for something.
This ain't no damn fifth.
It isn't?
At least 100. He's not king. He'll take me back.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I said one king.
You did not tell me.
I did kings. I don't smoke nothing but kings. See the box over there?
Even if I get it wrong, I'm trying here. In fact, we're both trying.
How long that thing record?
It records a few hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a really good sound. I love it. I can't wait to put the story together. And, of course, I'll bring you a copy of the story.
Okay, right on. Appreciate that.
When it's done.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Fred.
All right, babe.
You take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
I thought a lot about these unspoken rules I was looking for. I wanted a validation of a righteous family culture that turns out wasn't very productive in the end. Here's Alan Silver again.
I'm not necessarily interested in harmony. That sounds too utopian. I'd rather get out and scrap with people and figure out what it is that they need. Sort of keep that conversation open and recognize you're just not going to get everything you want. Like, you have to tell that to yourself, and you have to tell that to the people around you.
It took us a while, I think, to, like, understand your perspective, especially because we don't have kids. And it's just, it's a different life, and it's a different schedule from what we were living and what we were used to.
Will lives next door. He is the drummer in the band that practices in his basement. There is some justice in this, as I've practiced in basements and I don't remember how careful I was about who lived around me. Karmic symmetry, you could say.
We would play super loud, like, late into the night, and no one seemed to mind and stuff. We would try to, like, tell people when we were having, like, bigger parties and stuff, but...
Will and his fiance lived between Fred and my family. They were sweet, but we struggled with their noise for almost 4 years. We were relieved when they sold the house and left. Here's Will talking about Fred.
When we first moved in, he's very particular about people parking in front of his house. And we parked in front of his house a number of times, and so did our friends. And every time he would come over here and yell and bitch and scream about people parking in front of his house and how we had no respect. It was his way, I think, of, like, kind of establishing himself as, like, I've been here, I know how this neighborhood works. You're just some punk kid who bought a house and, like, wants to live in my neighborhood. This is my neighborhood.
Seems my expectations about noise and Fred's expectations about where people park their cars were both coming from our ideas about how people should behave when living around each other.
We didn't feel like we had to compromise, like, what we were doing, kind of in the same way Fred didn't feel like he had to compromise, like, with people parking in front of his house. Like, we thought within the law of, like, not playing after 10 and, you know, not being, like, too loud, like, we didn't care kind of beyond that. So yeah, it was definitely hard. It was just trying to get to a point where, like, we could understand each other, and a lot of that had to do with, like, us being lazy about, like, really putting more soundproofing. And it wasn't until, like, I mean, the more we got to know each other and the more, like, we tried to put ourselves in your shoes that we, I think, got a sense for how hard that might be with two twin boys who are, like, toddlers.
I remember Will's last party, the big farewell one. They brought us wine and a sweet card, but for me it just meant we were not going to sleep that night. Of course, I had tried earplugs, white noise, shut windows, a pillow over my head, but nothing worked. So I walked outside and started talking to a guest on their porch. Now I try to imagine it from her eyes. The crazy lady from next door telling her to look up at her bedroom window. Do you see how close that is?
If we think about our neighbors as, like, mysteries that we don't necessarily have to solve, but we have to, you know, we have to have something that we can talk about with them.
Here's Alan Silver once again. Sorry about the microphone bumping around sound.
And I don't want to say common ground, because it could be something ugly. We could, you know, we could be talking about how different our ideas are about something very local.
18th century philosopher Rousseau says that by entering into a social contract, we place restraints on our behavior, which make it possible to live in a community. His book has been read both as a totalitarian endorsement and a fundamental democratic statement. Nowadays, individual freedom is very important, but we don't seem free. There isn't much meaningful interaction with one another, and the possibility of working together for something greater seems daunting. Perhaps the notion of a social contract or the common good also feels unattractive because we seem more preoccupied with self-expression as opposed to a more humbling and anonymous collective effort.
Do you feel part of a community here?
Oh, yeah, I'm a part of the community. When I first moved here, I made the part. Do they feel part of my community? This is my area. So you can't move in here and think you run nothing. You're just running. When you move up in here, you're just running your mouth. You know what I'm gonna put you in check if y'all think you're lying. You see what I'm saying? I don't give a damn who you is, you know what I mean? You know, if you can't go with the flow, you know, if we can't live and let live, then you need to move on and go somewhere else, because we're not gonna get along, which we all get along and everything. I know everybody, over the block all around. So, yeah, we get along well.
I do know
yeah.
that.
Yeah, huh?
I know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The UN predicts that the world's urban population is expected to surpass 6 billion by 2045. Learning to make cities livable will be a great public health challenge. Learning to be a smaller part of a greater whole is our challenge.
The neighbors are all used to parties here now anyway. You know, and generally if you have one that gets really, really loud, you either talk to the people about it the next day or just figure, well, that was just a loud one.
You heard Bob in the first chapter. He lives across the street. He's retired after 22 years as grocery checker at Fred Meyer, and he was in the executive committee of his union. You can hear construction noise in the background, which is basically the sound of Portland right now.
Well, when you live in a city, you're going to have to put up with a lot of stuff that you normally don't particularly enjoy or want to listen to. In a city, you learn how to give people their own space because they're coming from so many places.
You know, you touch on a very important thing for me. I might still believe a little bit that there's an unspoken social contract that is based on this idea that we are aware of other people around us. And with this awareness, we try to be good neighbors.
You have to tolerate, yeah. There's nothing wrong with tolerating someone. You just do it because as you spend more time with them, you find out they're tolerating things about you. It's pretty much, you know, I think there is a social contract, but it's not written in stone because everyone does their things differently than the next person. If someone's going to raise a lot of hell, eventually the neighbors just get up about it. But, you know, it's never been, you know, I don't see that happening in this neighborhood. So I think we all pretty much care for each other. And, you know, everybody likes to have a good time. And sometimes you better come over and have a good time because we're going to be out late. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You just watch out for each other. We are all our brother's keepers.
I haven't come to terms with loud noise, but I believe in a more nuanced social contract that inspires us to know our neighbors and do the hard work of finding ways to live in peace together. The binary model is crumbling. It's not you versus me. It's often not a simple right or wrong. It's just our beautiful, messy, noisy complexity.
Endless ways to die. Imagine there are many ways to live.
I See You is produced, edited, and mixed by my mama, Carolina, and Carolina Alcadar in Portuguese.
In this episode, original music by Jesse Stevens and closing track by Connor Madigan.
And it's colder when you're lonely once again.
Thank you to Jesse Stevens for voiceover and interview post-production, as well as mastering. Special thanks to my Northeast Portland block, Alan Silver, and my brother Hishar. Family argument used with permission. Thank you, guys. This project got off the ground with the Regional Arts and Culture Council grant and Caldera's 2018 Artist Residency. My gratitude. Music by Italics and Zaki L, used with permission from Oligopolis Records from Portland, Oregon. I don't know if I'm pronouncing anything right. La musique électronique de Niger by Maman Sani et son Or, used with permission from Sahel Sounds. Ascension by Low Leaf and Crazy Way by Iman Omari, used with permission from Fresh Selects from Portland, Oregon.
Thank you for listening to my mother's stories. I am not sure what they are about. I think they are about the nature.
Really?
About the world.
Sure.
About the block.
Sure.
I don't know about this stuff. I'm bored, I'll think about that stuff.
That's totally fair. If you don't think about, what do you think about?
I don't know. I'll make a very sad thought about that.
Imagine the many ways. ways to live. But neither you or I give a damn about what it means to live. To live, and neither you or I give a damn about what it means to live is to be lonely once again.
That was ICU by Carolina Pfister, chapters 1 and 2, with original music and mastering by Jesse Stevens. Chapter 3 will play next month at this time, so tune in Monday, December 3rd at 11 p.m. to hear more. Thanks to Carolina, to Jesse, and to Mo Baustern and Liam Delta. I'm Erin Yankee. Thanks for listening.
Tune into KBOO Tuesday, November 6th from 6 to 10 p.m. for election night coverage. We'll have national coverage by Pacifica and Native Voice One. And at 8 p.m., our local news team will provide election results and analysis. Again, that's election night coverage Tuesday, November 6th, starting at 6 p.m. after the KBOO Evening News here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
I don't know if I know all the words or not, but I'm going to try to sing it for you.
In celebration of our 50th anniversary, KBOO is teaming up with the Mississippi Records Music and Film Series. KBOO will be hosting Wild in the Streets on Wednesday, November 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. A freaked-out 60s exploitation movie, Wild in the Streets follows Max Frost and the Troopers, a psychedelic rock band that managed to take over the United States after the voting age is lowered to 16. The new regime legalizes all drugs, puts everyone over 30 into acid re-education camps, and creates a new hippie fascist utopia. Again, that's Wild in the Streets on Wednesday, November 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Portland. Lost inside for a while, and now I'm found. And I found that little fuzzy room way down deep inside, where everything old is new again, and you might even grow nostalgic for places you've never been to before. And there's that big chair that I crawl into every time and look out and be here now. From the corner of Calicala Boulevard and Bourbon Street, in a little Spanish village, a small discotheque on the Isle of Capri. Welcome to Far Away Places!